Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Fat Mascara. I'm Jess.
Hi Jess, I'm Jen. Hello everyone.
Welcome to our beauty podcast. Listen, today is an interview day and I am pumped for this one. Okay, I haven't listened to this one yet. Jen interviewed a founder, and maybe if you listen to our show a lot, you know that we don't typically have a lot of brand founders on the show, but this founder really piqued our interest. She has a hair care line, but it was founded on really an interesting principle. It was about avoiding problems.
Yes. Well, she's a dermatologist, yes. But she founded a hairline because she saw hair products cause problems with your skin.
Right. And then it got us to thinking, like, what other problems could be caused by just...
Yes.
Products we use like on the reg. So
I know. And I was like, we need to do a whole podcast on the weird side effects of beauty products you didn't know. And I was like, where do we find a dermatologist? And I was like, oh yeah, the lady who founded a line basically on this. That's who we should talk to. We should probably get to who she is. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes these things come up really organically. And that's just one of the really special things that happen as Jen and I kind of go about our jobs.
And our making of a podcast for you. So we have Dr. Iris Rubin is who the interview is with. She's a dermatologist and got her undergrad degree from Stanford and then her medical degree from Harvard. NBD.
No big.
Yeah. She did her dermatology residency at the University of Chicago and Harvard Medical School. And then she completed a laser surgery fellowship at Mass General Hospital. She also served as the medical director of the Dermatologic and Vascular Laser Surgery Program at Children's National Medical Center in Washington. We actually talk about that before we get into the whole show and about what the work she did with children. It's fascinating. In 2018, she launched Scene Hair Care. Is that the first time I said the name of the brand? This is why it's like, clearly we don't have brand founders on a lot, like, because it's not just about the brand, but that happens to be the name of her brand, Scene Hair Care. And now why would a laser surgeon create a hair brand? That'll all make sense once you hear this interview. And like Jess said, we also talk about other weird side effects from beauty products that you might not realize. We also get into the whole silicone debate. Why don't people include silicone in hair products? What's going on there? Dr. Rubin has some theories. And I feel like if you have body acne or you have surprising acne you can't find a cause of, you are definitely going to want to listen to this because I think you're going to find some help. So I hope you enjoy the interview. And here's Dr. Rubin. Hey, Dr. Rubin, welcome to Fat Mascara. So just a little background. I know we met maybe 5 or 6 years ago when you launched your line, Scene. And I remember you telling me you worked with children. So before we get into the whole theme of our podcast and everything we're going to talk about, can you share with me how you got into dermatology and like why, how you focused your career before you started this company?
Yeah, I love it. And actually, I think it was about 3 years ago because Scene's third birthday just came up. But I know time, I feel like post-COVID, time just has an entirely different dimension. I don't know if you're experiencing
that. The pandemic felt like 6 years. What can
right,
I say?
Right, exactly. But yeah, so I actually never in a million years thought I'd be a dermatologist. I knew I wanted to be a doctor from an early age. I just never liked to see anyone suffering and actually thought I'd become a surgeon. My best friend from medical school is a transplant surgeon. She's a total badass. But I discovered quickly that I needed to sleep and that was not compatible with surgery. So interestingly, I actually found my way to being a pediatric laser surgeon, which is a specialty, highly specialized part of dermatology. But for me, I realized dermatology was just so much more than I thought it was initially. I'm very visual and it's just, you know, anytime someone has a skin issue, it's just so much more than the skin. It can affect you emotionally, your sense of well-being. And I discovered in medical school that there's just such a broad array of skin issues beyond, you know, what I knew initially. So I kind of stumbled upon it, actually started in internal medicine, but, love the visual aspect and love being able to fix things. And I think in dermatology, you often can fix things.
Yeah. And you mentioned the emotional aspect. I imagine if you were doing pediatric laser surgery, we're talking about like birthmarks that you'd be removing and maybe even burns and things like that. Is that right?
Yeah. So I actually did a laser and cosmetic fellowship at Harvard, but I'm like one of the rare people that took that and instead of treating wrinkles. I it's a terrible saying, but I like to say the only wrinkles I care about are my own. I spent most of my career treating babies and kids with disfiguring birthmarks. So I specialized in vascular birthmarks, port wine stains, especially, and then also built up at Children's National a program for scars, for burn scars within the Department of Surgery. And, you know, it was really, really amazing. And actually, our give back mission at Scene is to support laser clinics in the developing world that treat kids with disfiguring birthmarks and scars.
That's beautiful. And I mean, I know some of them were babies, but were there ever kids that were old enough that, like, you know, you could see the emotional change in them after they had a surgery?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it was really powerful. And I mean, it was actually really hard to leave and do Scene, but I have three kids of my own. And, you know, anyone who, you know, I think to the outside, I might've appeared like Superwoman, but Superwoman does not exist. So like having three kids, being in the operating room, launching a product line, you know, it's just not compatible, at least for me, with sanity.
Yeah. You were still working like as a practicing dermatologist when you launched it, right?
Well, so when I was developing Scene, I was working at Children's. And yeah, when I launched the company in 2014, we actually went to market in 2018. But when I first started the company, I was a practicing dermatologist at Children's. And, you know, I just had to pick. And I actually believe so much in the mission of Scene. And I love to be creative. I think that's why I also picked pediatric laser surgery, because it's there's a lot of art to it. So, you know, made the decision to launch Scene.
Yeah. So obviously we're going to talk about your company, but before we talk about this, I wanted to ask you about just as your experience as a dermatologist working with patients, like, was it common for you to see medical issues or even just cosmetic issues or side effects caused by beauty and consumer products? Obviously, when you're doing laser surgery, there's often like a genetic component and a birth, you know, component to that.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about, you know, just in the everyday practice.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, I think that it is really common. I'm not sure I fully recognized it until after I launched Scene. I mean, I did practice general dermatology, but I don't think I fully realized, you know, the impact that, you know, products are can be really beneficial, but they also can contribute to skin issues from acne or eczema, you know, being the most common.
Yeah.
So I think I was more aware of it in eczema because, you know, for example, a lot of people get hand eczema. And so we know there's so many allergens and irritants that contribute to that. But the impact, I'd say, of products on acne, I was not nearly as aware of as I am today.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, we'll get into this, but I know I asked you to do a little homework about how it's not just acne, and we'll get into that. But let's talk about, so we're like mentioning Steen, but we're not.
Jen, I did my homework. I'm a really good student. Look, I did my homework.
I love
though your questions, really. Like, this is fun for me because, you know,
as we told people in the intro, the reason that we were doing this entire interview focused on this, but we'll get into that. Before we do, so you can created this line Steen. It's a skin caring shampoo and conditioner and other products. So you must have been seeing these issues with not just like with skincare products or like laundry products or things, but with like hair products, right? What were the issues that you were able to connect to people's hair products?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it was really personal initially. I was in my 30s and every time I'd go get my hair done at the salon, my hair would look great, but then I would break out actually about 5 or 6 days later. And this was a pattern. And so then I said, okay, let me stop using styling products. And let's just see if I use shampoo and conditioner if this happens. And it kept happening. And so then I started talking to my friends and said, hey, have you ever gotten acne? You know, my dermatology colleagues from hair care products and Googling it. But it was not something, you know, I did a lot of my training at Harvard at really great institutions. It wasn't something that we were really taught, which was that hair products can contribute to acne. And, you know, for me, it was such a big impact because I say it takes one pimple to ruin your day. Like if we were talking now and I had a pimple, I'd be like, you know, just like, nah, yeah, don't look. And the whole idea that we can be investing so much in skincare, you know, people going on antibiotics. My son actually right now is on Accutane. I mean, acne can be quite devastating and require systemic medications. And the whole idea that people could be bathing with their hair products in comedogenic ingredients that are exacerbating acne and not realizing it, to me was kind of like this epiphany. So we actually did a study to figure out, okay, why is this happening and how common is this? But, you know, I wish I was smart enough to say I was recognizing this when I was in private practice treating acne, but it really wasn't until this personal experience. And I don't think that dermatologists always recognize the link between hair care and acne.
Yeah. So you said you did the study. So why were some hair products causing acne?
Yeah. So it was so cool to figure out why. And the reason is because hair products are actually skincare products. And what I mean by that is anytime you use a product, it can leave a residue on your skin for hours. So what we did is we took the top selling shampoo, conditioner, and styling product and looked after you use shampoo and conditioner. We looked at the scalp, the forehead, the back and the cheeks. Hours later, we did tape stripping and there was residue from the shampoo and conditioner and residue from the styling product. So hours after you shampoo and conditioner, you rinse and forget about it, but your skin doesn't. It can actually stay on your skin for hours. And actually, you asked me about some other interesting, you know, and I know this isn't just about hair care. You asked me about laundry detergent. And as I was doing my research, you know, that's also about residue.
Yeah, these are how those products work. They're designed to stick to the clothing to make it
exactly
softer, or your hair to make it shinier.
Exactly, Jen. I mean, that is like brilliant for so hair products are designed.
I learned that from you, please.
I don't know about that. These are such good questions. I'm impressed. But yeah, so it's basically residue. And, you know, people hear residue, they think, ew. But, you know, when you use like a high-grade moisturizer, that's residue. Like we put residue on our skin every day to make it look great. But it's just, what's the quality of that residue? So if hair products are getting on the skin, let's make sure that they're skin-friendly. In my case, it was, you know, an issue with acne, but it turns out hair products, you know, can also contribute to eczema, to scalp itch, to scalp flaking, fragrance sensitivity, a whole variety of skin issues.
Were you able to find out like which ingredients were leaving that comedogenic residue and causing the issues?
It's a great question. So what I did is I created a spreadsheet of any data related to comedogenicity or irritation for ingredients and personal care products. So I have a spreadsheet of over 400 ingredients. But interestingly, many ingredients have no data on comedogenicity. And then for many ingredients, the data we have is from rabbit ear studies, which don't always translate to humans. And to make it more interesting, it's not just a binary thing, like this ingredient is good or bad. It can matter how much of it's in there, how it combines. Like you asked me about silicones, we can talk about that. I think silicones are not bad actors on their own. I think it's just sometimes they combine. It's like, you know, they're not making friends with the right people, you know, and then they contribute to clogged pores. So we, you know, it took 4 years to launch our initial products. And I put the initial formulations directly on my face. Unfortunately, my twin sister was, you know, I got her to put it on her face. And obviously we run our products through third-party comedogenicity testing. So I say we have a good sense for what causes clogged pores, but you really never know until you test the finished product, because combinations and thresholds really matter.
So it's not like the kind of thing where you could, as someone in the store could turn over a product and be like, oh, there's that thing Dr. Rubin said not to look for. You had to build your formulas from the ground up and keep testing them to make sure as you added ingredients, they weren't causing the issues.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, you know, if you are getting acne though, from hair care products, like take a look, make sure a coconut oil is highly comedogenic. So is cocoa butter. You know, there's some common things that are irritants, like, preservatives, methyl chloroisothiazolinone, or, you know, methyl isothiazolinone. I can't believe I could actually say those. Those are common irritants. So there are some things to look for. But it's, there's a lot of sneaky ingredients. There's things like Loreth-4. And so it's not as simple as just turning it over, but that doesn't mean you can't turn it over and see some things and say, hey, that, you know, that could be a problem
for
me.
That might be causing an issue. But okay, let's talk about one of these, like, really, people love to talk about silicone because it just seems simple enough to understand for people, because, like, oh, it's a lubricant and slippery, you know? And you said it's not always a bad actor on its own, but you didn't include it in your hair care line. Why did you decide not to include it?
So I think there's really mixed opinion about whether silicones clog pores. I think they're actually a great ingredient for the skin. But I do think silicones have the potential, because they are occlusive. So they form this barrier on the skin to trap other ingredients and then lead to clogged pores and comedogenic products. Do I know that for sure? No, but we didn't want to take the risk. And you know, just candidly, there's also enough bad press on silicones that when you're launching a product, we also are aware of, you know, the perception. But it was partly for perception. But I'd say I also, because I think it is possible that silicones do trap other ingredients. But we've never done the study to know that for sure.
I appreciate your transparency, because I feel like a lot of brands say, no, silicones are bad, because they don't think that consumers are intelligent enough or sophisticated enough to understand that it's not a binary thing. It's like, it depends on some cases. So they just do this blanket statement, and then people never are able to identify the thing that's causing them the issue. So I appreciate you explaining why you didn't.
Yeah. And I think that's so true. Like there's like these villains, like these ingredients that are considered, like, you know, terrible. And I think it's often more nuanced than that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the fear-mongering marketing, we've talked about that on our show, Jess and I, like, just the no-no lists without any reasoning behind them doesn't really do a service. But, you know, I've talked to other hair care brands and people that formulate hair care about silicone, and there is another perception, and this is not like correlate. Well, it's correlated, but we don't know if there's causation. I want to see, get your take on it, that, like, could silicone cause hair thinning? Because silicone didn't start to be used in hair products until like the 90s, right? And then a lot of people point to historical data on hair thinning in women in the 90s. But, like, listen, lots of other things have happened since the 90s, right? So what do you think about that? Like, because it makes sense to people, like, oh, it'll plug up my pore of my hair and then my hair will get thinner.
Yeah, So I think it's such a great question, and hair thinning is so personal. My own mom actually has thinning hair right now. My sister just bought her like a, you know, she's been having extensions and just got her this, like, you know, topper. You know, she's considering like hair transplant. I mean, it's really significant. So it's, you know, that's another skin condition that really affects you, you know, emotionally and, you know, anything that can contribute. And interestingly, there's certain types of scarring. There's scarring and non-scarring hair loss, but there's a type of scarring hair loss that has been associated with different potentially ingredients, even some sunscreens. I'm not telling people not to use sunscreen. So there is some data to suggest that ingredients can contribute potentially to.
And when you say scarring, that means that, like, it causes this inflammation over time that makes the hair follicle sort of like close up a little bit.
Yeah. Like basically like the follicle dies. And once a follicle is fully scarred, it won't regrow. I know, it's super sad. It's super sad. But so this story about silicones that you ask is a great one. There's no direct evidence I know of that silicones can cause hair loss. However, if silicones can clog pores, you know, the follicles on the scalp are literally the manufacturing plant for the hair. So actually at Scene, we are looking into what does clogging pores on the scalp do to hair health. Intuitively, it seems like a really bad idea. If that's the manufacturing plant, if you clog it, you know, that just doesn't seem like it's going to create an optimal environment for hair health.
Right.
So if silicones are contributing to clogged pores or trapping certain ingredients in the pores, which, you know, have been associated with hair loss on their own, you know, that's a question.
Okay. So we're like trying to head off the bad issues. We're not saying yet that this is the reason that, you know.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't say silicones cause hair loss.
Well, people would, so I'm glad you're
Yeah, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. You know, I do think silicones can build up on the hair. A lot of them are not biodegradable. Like there's other reasons, not like there's other reasons not to use silicones, but are silicones in some of my skincare products? Yes. But again, if they are contributing to clogged pores on the scalp, you know, that's an outstanding question if that could cause hair loss.
You also didn't include fragrance. And I know you're a dermatologist, so that made a lot of sense to me. But like, fragrance also gets a really bad rap these days. Why did you decide to make fragrance-free versions of your hair care? I actually know the one that I use is not fragrance-free because it smells delicious.
I don't use a fragrance-free either. So okay. I just think it's, again, it's like about choice. Like nothing, you know, I love what you said, how like there's this fear-mongering and like ingredients are either good or they're bad, but it's just not like that. It's like, you know, a lot of it is choice. And so I think there's the reason that we went with fragrance-free versions, and so many people told us not to launch fragrance-free, like there wouldn't be a big market. It is flying off the shelves. I mean, people, if you don't want to use fragrance, it's really hard to find luxury hair care
in hair products. Care for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Luxury it's really hard. Yeah. Yeah. But the reasons that someone wouldn't want to use fragrance is one, they could be allergic to it, a contact dermatitis. And I looked up some statistics and I'll share those with you. And a second is migraines. Interestingly, you know, fragrance is a common trigger for migraine. And then the third is, you know, people who want a really clean product. Fragrance are composed of tens or hundreds of ingredients. And even, you know, it seemed we use it at a low level, which complies with many clean standards. But some people don't believe in any synthetic fragrance. People also ask us, why don't you use a natural fragrance? Well, just because something's natural doesn't mean it's skin friendly. I mean, poison ivy is 100% natural.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of essential oils and botanicals can contribute to, you know, clogged pores and irritation. So that's why we don't do a natural fragrance.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
What are those? So what are those stats about fragrance? Is that it causes migraines or other issues?
You asked me, and I was doing my homework, how big of an issue is fragrance for most people? So, you know, in some recent studies, it was up to 4.5% of adults may have an actual skin allergy to fragrance. But 34.7% of U.S. adults report fragrance sensitivity to fragranced consumer products. So it's not just about the skin. Like some people might get watery eyes or nose congestion, or they may get a migraine, you know, so fragrance, you know, it can be a pretty big issue for people.
Yeah, of course. And let's talk about, so that like kind of leads us into some of these other, because fragrance is in everything, right? So like just the stats you gave us there shows us that like maybe our laundry detergent, maybe our like Glade plug-in, like all candles, all these other things that you don't think about could be causing some sort of issue for you. But let's talk about some other personal care products that might cause unwanted skin issues. Like obviously you personally found that hair care was doing something. Are there any other personal care products that could have side effects? Like, you know, like nail polish or something?
Yeah. One thing I want to say before, just one other comment is just be careful if you see unscented, sometimes there's masking fragrance. So it's just noting that. I mean, you know, one thing, like I'm in my 40s and I color my hair and I'm like, you know, there's a study now that came out, you know, on the NIH website that it said it found women who regularly use permanent hair dye in the year prior to enrolling in the study. And there was like 46,000 people in this study.
Wow.
And I believe it was a retrospective study. They were 9% more likely than women who didn't use hair dye to develop breast cancer. So, you know, that's something I think about because I color my hair regularly.
But you're a doctor. Do you ever think like, well, that could just be a correlation, like they were doing something else that year that they were doing hair dye? Like,
absolutely. And that's such a great point because this is not a randomized controlled study. Absolutely.
Oh, wait, it's not randomized and controlled?
No, this is not randomized. Control. I know because it was 46,000 women. I doubt that it was. So to your point, it's not definitive, but it's, you know, it raises the question.
But that's the kind of study then other researchers would look at it and be like, here's something that we maybe should look into and do a randomized controlled study on to see if there's causation, right? Is that how that typically works with research?
Yes. Although I don't know if anyone like would do the randomized controlled study.
Right. Of course. Because if there's not money or medical issues, drug that could be made from it, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just get worried because I remember there was a study about deodorant and a correlation with, you know, when they removed breast cancer tumors, they found some of the particles from the antiperspirants, like the aluminum in the tumors. And, you know, the media ran with that. And I'm not saying it's not true, but like everybody just hears in their head, oh, deodorant causes cancer. When they hear something like that, you know?
100%. And I still color my hair. So, you know, but just, you know, just like things. Yeah. So, but I think basically any product has the potential. Like I, you know, we're developing a face lotion for Scene. And I started using it and I realized that I used to have this tingly, irritated feeling on my cheek for like, you know, every winter for the last couple of years and it went away. And then all of a sudden I realized, wow, like my daily moisturizer, I think was causing like a low grade irritation.
Oh, well, you would think it was the weather, but it was like, no, you were using more moisturizer. So it was probably the moisturizer.
I think it's both because, you know, in the wintertime, it is drier. And so, you know, we call it winter itch. Everyone's more susceptible to any kind of eczema. So I think it was the combination of that's just when my skin's the most vulnerable. So, you know, personally, that's what I've seen. But definitely there's, you know, a whole, again, not to scare people, but pretty much any product can cause
a side effect,
a potential skin issue. I think, you know, when you're talking about acne, you know, just making sure that your sunscreen is non-comedogenic, I think is really important. And sunscreens have come a long way with that. Yeah. You know, I've definitely broken out from sunscreens before, you know, just making sure everything you're all cleansers and lotions and makeup, like just that everything's non-comedogenic. I think that's really important. And, you know, I will say, even if something's labeled as non-comedogenic, it's still not a perfect test. So just pay attention to how your skin's reacting. Like I like to, you know, what if I have a skin issue, just kind of make one change at a time and give it a week and see, you know, okay, what was contributing? Yeah. And then the same thing for eczema. I think, you know, really any personal care product can contribute to eczema.
And well, so there's personal care products too that don't really get tested for comedogenicity, however you say that, because you're not supposed to rub them all on your face. I'm thinking of like toothpaste. Like obviously you're not going to apply toothpaste to your face, but if you've ever, you have kids, have you ever watched a kid brush their teeth? Like it's like a foam beard at the end, right?
Right.
Like
right.
They're covered in toothpaste. So like that can cause issues, right?
Is that what I'm— Well, so like perioral dermatitis, and it's funny, I didn't think about it, but you know, I think I've had perioral dermatitis from toothpaste, so perioral dermatitis is like a acne or eczema looking type rash that's often around the mouth. It can be around the eyes and the nose as well. We don't know for sure what causes it, but certain products have been associated, including possibly fluorinated toothpaste. So, you know, that's something like to consider. But yeah, that's a really good point. Like toothpaste hasn't been, you know, designed to be non-comedogenic.
Well, right. And you look at like a lot of adult women get, you know, that type of hormonal acne on their chin. And I know perioral dermatitis, like if you're not a derm, you might just think, oh, I've got chin acne. It must be like hormone chin acne. It could be, you know, just, it's like you have to be a detective or go to a derm to find out what it really is causing it.
Yeah. And it could even be sneaky, even for dermatologists, you know, perioral dermatitis. But that's a great point.
Is that one of the ones that like, if you use... My friend's a derm and I was using like, I had some steroid. You know, when you get something from the derm, you're like, oh yeah, they gave me this cream and you just save it in your medicine cabinet. And then months later, some bump pops up and you're like, I've got that cream from a derm. So I think I had a steroid cream for something.
Yeah.
And then I started like applying it to what I thought was the same thing. And my friend's like, you literally are making it worse. Like
putting...
Is it perioral dermatitis that steroids?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what happened to me. And I was like, applying the steroid, like steroids, they fix everything. Meanwhile, I'm making a bigger and worse case of perioral dermatitis, not realizing like, duh, I'm not a doctor. Like clearly the advice here is like, talk to your doctor, right?
It was a reasonable thing. I think steroids are like the number one to, you know, to try first. But in the case of perioral dermatitis, it can definitely make it worse.
Yeah. I learned my lesson that way. What about like cleaning and household products? Do you ever see reactions or have you ever read about reactions from those?
Absolutely. I think the most common thing is like hand eczema, hand dermatitis, you know, from cleaning products. You know, they're just full of surfactants and cleansing agents that, you know, can be really harsh on the skin. So, you know,
do you wear gloves when you clean?
I don't, but you know, I hate wearing gloves, but I'll try and get the mildest, you know, soaps and like my house is full. Like every bathroom has Whole Foods, you know, fragrance free, like foaming hand cleanser. And I actually used to take hand cleanser with me to my office because I can never use
that pink soap. It's like
yeah.
The most
or yeah. And it's,
what's up
terrible.
With hospitals in that pink soap? Why do they all have that horrible pink soap?
I don't know if it's a cost issue. Like, you know, I know that those soaps are considered antimicrobial, but honestly, I don't know if they're really better than just, you know, plain old soap and water for, you know, a practice that's not in a hospital.
Yeah.
But yeah, so cleaning agents definitely like contact dermatitis, but you know, if you're having bad hand eczema, definitely wearing gloves can be a good idea. I don't.
Are there any others? I know this is where I gave you some homework that like any other surprising things that can cause, you know, beauty issues, I'll call them, and of course, medical issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think the laundry detergent one is interesting. Like we talked about it briefly, but the whole idea that even laundry detergent could potentially leave a residue on clothes, causing contact dermatitis, eczema. And some people have even wondered about like, you know, residue contributing to acne.
Yeah. And so you're talking about laundry detergent, like when you're washing your clothes, what about like fabric softeners?
Yeah. I think fabric softeners, you know, same issue. Like, well, I was thinking, you know, even if you don't use fabric softener, there's no data to confirm this, but people have questioned whether just laundry detergent leaves a residue. So like if I had washed this shirt in the laundry detergent and I didn't even touch laundry detergent, if it's sitting on my skin, does it have a residue that could then, you know, cause eczema or like leave some sulfates behind that could contribute to clogged pores? Like that's been raised as a question.
Oh yeah. Some of them are marketed as like, oh, it's got stain protectors in it. And you're like, okay, cool. If I wash my clothes with that and it has some stain protectors, like obviously that was some sort of residue that's left on there that helps stains not set in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's more of a question whether laundry detergent contribute to acne. I do think laundry detergents can contribute to eczema. What else in terms of other like things I did my research on? So I have the craziest hair naturally. It's very, very frizzy and just not attractive naturally. So hair straighteners are a big point of conversation, like in, yeah. you know, with between me and my twin sister, like, you know, is it safe to get
a... Is she your identical twin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know,
this is great. She could be your guinea pig. Yeah. Like, you go ahead and try that. Let me see how it looks on you.
Although she's 11 minutes older. So she's still like, you know, she's still the big sister. So I don't know if she'll try things sometimes.
So what was the hair straightening iron discussion with her?
Well, the discussion is like, you know, keratin treatments, like, is it safe? Cause you know, a formaldehyde.
And then, like an Insulon smoothing treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the formaldehyde based ones. Like that's one that I think about a lot. And then also, so that same NIH study, breast cancer study, did show that women who used hair straighteners at least every 5 to 8 weeks were about 30% more likely to develop breast cancer.
And this is the Insulin treatments, not like a hot tool. We're talking about like the ones that right now aren't supposed to have formaldehyde, but I know when they heat up, certain ingredients can cause like off-gassing of like formaldehydes and stuff.
You know, that's a really good point. I don't know in this study, it was of 46,000 women, like if it was all Insulin treatments or, you know, which, but to your point, you know,
throwing because then there's like the lye-based relaxers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know if they sorted out which ones it is, but yeah, I mean, I always think about that. I actually myself just got a non-formaldehyde smoothing treatment, which I was very happy with, but my take on it is I personally try and avoid the formaldehyde based ones just for
I think for the health of the salon worker as well, I would want that because that's, you know, maybe one dose of it for you every 3 months is not so bad, but that person every day, day in and day out, I think about their health too, you know?
For sure. For sure.
So that's something to look into, the hair straighteners. Anything else?
You know, I once had like a friend ask me about like allergy to lipstick and, you know, I mean, anything can give you a reaction, but in her case, her lips would get red and swollen with certain lipsticks. And I think it was actually certain dyes that were, you know, causing that. So
yes. And remember those lip plumpers from, I don't know, there's still some that have this, but I remember it was capsicum.
Oh, was it really? Was it capsicum?
That's what, like, so there was a very popular lip plumper that had that in it, which like as a dermatologist, your eyes just lit up, went like,
yeah,
what?
Oh my God. Cause that's like hot chili peppers. Like
it's
that's
literally
crazy.
Like chili pepper extract. Yeah. But can you imagine telling a patient, here, use this beauty product that has chili pepper extract in it, you know?
You know, that's really funny. Yes and no, though, because I, you know, I did do a laser and cosmetic fellowship. So I just, you know, I've injected lips with fillers and I know people really desire that. So it seems crazy to me. But then again, people inject fillers in their lips. So,
right. But that's, you're getting a plumped look, but you're not getting inflammation and irritation. So I remember once using one of these. Like I looked like I was all red all around. You get a hot stinging sensation. I mean, you're rubbing chili pepper on your lips, that is, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I think fillers are definitely a better way to go than red, hot, inflamed lips.
Yeah. There's another ingredient that like menthol, I know, is in a lot of things that say they're like cooling, or even some medicated stuff, you know, has menthol in it, like a Vapo rub and things. What do derms say about menthol? Like, have you ever seen issues with that?
I haven't seen issues with menthol. I know it was in this common anti-itch lotion that people often like. So I think it actually can be therapeutic, but I can't say a lot of it.
And this goes back to what you were saying about like the dosing. Like obviously if you're like even with silicones or anything, like maybe in a small dose, it's good. But then the minute you go over a certain number, it's starting to cause irritation or whatever.
Yeah, I think potentially. Yeah. And obviously, you know, different people react to different things. So I'm sure there's some people that are sensitive to menthol, but I think for many people, it's tolerated fine.
Yeah. So before we let you go, you mentioned that you're developing a face cream. So I'm curious, just because like you're a hairline, what was there like a personal, I'm ready for a story about your sister of like, well, my sister needed a face cream, which really means you needed a face cream.
Well, actually, like, so we do, yes, I haven't been able to find like for me, when I design a product, it's got to be non-comedogenic, non-irritating, and clean, and then just have like really amazing function. And yeah. So I think that there's room for great skincare that meets those criteria as well. But the story behind Seen Skin, which I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be talking about, but I'm already telling you about it, is so we did a study, an acne study with Seen, and we gave people, 27 people, it was a dermatologist graded study, Seen to use for 8 weeks. And the results were pretty astounding. 70% of people with body acne had their acne improved just by changing their hair products to Seen, and 52% with face acne had improvement. And so we just have so many people who have their skin improve either with acne or then they say, well, what else should I be using?
Totally.
Yeah.
So like that's, you figured out the key for that and not, you know, why not move on to skincare? So what are some of your other, I know you get your hair smooth. I'm just curious about your personal favorite.
Well, I first did it for the first time.
Well, clearly you're happy with it. So
I'm happy because, you know, like I created Seen, like I actually am not, believe it or not, like a big, you know, I don't like to do my hair. And so for me, you know, especially as a working mom of three, like now I can do it in 5 minutes or less. Like that's a beautiful thing. Like, yeah. You know, and Seen is also, it's like a 2-in-1. It's like great hair care and good for the skin. It's like, you know, it just does more for you. And so I love that.
What about your sunscreen? I've never met a derm who doesn't have like a bunch of favorite sunscreen.
Yeah, I do have a favorite sunscreen. I just love the SkinCeuticals. They have their physical sunscreen, the SPF 50. They have the one that comes tinted or the white one. I love it.
Yeah. And any other makeup favorites, like a mascara, any of your favorite color products?
You know, it's funny. I do love mascara, but I love... there's a eyeshadow called Scintillance by Chanel. I just love it. It's just got like a sparkle to it.
Is that a single?
It's like, yeah, it's like a little tub, like, and you just, it's kind of like, I don't know what you call it. It's not like a totally dry eyeshadow. It's a little,
oh, yes.
Yeah. So I
it's
love
like
that.
It's a cream pot.
It's a cream pot. Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. And then I love, in terms of other skin products, SkinCeuticals CE Ferulic, I think really works. It just like brightens. And a good mascara for sure. I still use Lancome Definisils. I've tried so many. I love Hourglass too.
Oh yeah. No, that's a classic.
Yeah, I know. It just works for my lashes. What's your favorite mascara given this recording?
Oh, lately it's been the Thrive Cosmetics. It's a tubing mascara. Everything smears on me. So the tubing mascaras create like a little like polymer wrap around your lashes instead of like just like a standard ink kind of mascara.
Ooh, okay.
But they freak people out when they wash their face sometimes because it looks like, oh my God, is my lash falling out? But it's just like the little tubes coming off, you know?
Yeah. It's like when you've ever gotten lashes put on and then you wash your face and the lashes come off. You're like,
This is just like the little formula that looks like lashes. But yeah, that's a really good one. Yeah, I'm just always curious because people that work in the aesthetics world obviously have done their homework with beauty products.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, we do this Fat Mascara 5 at the end of every interview. So you are going to be subjected to it. What was the first beauty or grooming product you remember falling in love with?
It's really not very sexy, but I remember just discovering benzoyl peroxide. So I'm the kid of immigrants. And when I had acne, I was not taken to the dermatologist. Sorry, mom, dad, you're the best parents, but wish you took me to the dermatologist for acne. And I just remember discovering benzoyl peroxide and being like, wow, like this could really change my skin. So that really was my first like beauty discovery.
Do you remember, was it like the Clearasil or like?
It was like Oxy or Clearasil. And I would leave a white layer.
Yeah.
A white layer, like all over. Like I would like do like a mask with it, like at night.
Oh my God.
It's all I had access
to. Doing that
to
your skin now, it would probably be like so dry.
Yeah, it would be very drying. It would.
So if there's one rule you wish everybody would follow, what would it be?
You know, I think I'm going to give two, but definitely like be kind. Be kind. But I also think just like be yourself. Like be, you know, like I think just be radically unabashedly yourself. Like I think, you know, that's what I try and teach my kids. Like don't conform, you know, like I think that's just the best way to live.
Yeah. What's your favorite snack?
I love peanut butter pretzels, gluten-free ones.
Like peanut butter filled? Like the little?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Who makes gluten-free peanut butter filled pretzels?
This brand called Quinn, Quinn. Super good.
I was like, there's no way she doesn't have a specific brand.
But
like
not a low calorie food. Just a warning.
Of course, it's a snack. Yeah. So what's the most played song on your like phone or your playlist right now?
Yeah. So my 7-year-old son and I love Ed Sheeran. So it's Bad Habits.
How old are your kids? Seven is what?
I have 7, 12, and then almost 15.
Okay. Yeah.
Bad Habits is
a good song. Huh?
Do you have kids?
I have a stepson.
Ah.
He lives in Germany, though. And so the listeners know that I'm trying to learn German. I mean, he speaks English, obviously, but I just had German class right before our interview. So I was like, got to get back in English mode. Anyway.
Amazing. I told my son that we had to go, something was in Germantown. And he was like, I'm learning German because one of our nannies teaches him a little. I'm like, no, Germantown's in Maryland. Because, you know. Anyhow.
Oh, there's a Germantown like every state. I grew up in Philadelphia. There's a Germantown. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. No, they do not speak German in Germantown.
Yeah, I know. It was so cute. Yeah.
That's adorable. Yeah. Okay. So let's pretend we're making a movie of your life. And so there's the character going off to like Stanford and Harvard and then curing lasers to cure kids and then creating this brand that takes over the world. Who is going to narrate this movie?
So I would actually have my brother-in-law. So my brother-in-law is married to my twin sister. I would have him narrate. He's my business partner.
Wait, are you married?
This is super interesting. I'm married and my husband works with my twin sister and my twin sister's husband works with me. This didn't happen until like our 40s.
Okay.
But yeah. But anyhow, Greg is my business partner. He's actually the CEO of Scene and he just like gets me and he's got this amazing radio voice. So I would have Greg narrate it.
Okay. So the reason I asked is I was like, oh, what would your husband say about saying that your sister's husband? Now, does your sister's husband and your husband get along?
They do. I mean, they're not like clones of each other. They're like very, very different.
Okay, at least you're not going to tell me you married a set of twins.
No. They're totally, totally different, but they get along great.
And she works with your husband.
Yeah. They co-founded a venture capital fund, a science-based venture capital fund. So yeah, it's kind of cool.
In the family.
It is. Yeah.
And are they the Rubens also? Who are they?
No, actually my maiden name is Kedar and my sister still doesn't understand why I would take, you know, why I took someone else's name. But I actually changed to Ruben because when I was in practice, everyone would always say, Dr. Kedar, where's your name from? And like, you're so busy. I was like, you know, Ruben's so much easier. No one's going to ask me about, you know, and I actually wanted to take the name Ruben.
I love that it was for efficiency. Well, if I change my name, that'll like knock out 30 seconds out of every point.
I was working at Mass General and it was crazy. There were so literally because people would always it's kind of unfortunate actually that the medical system is like that. It wasn't like that when I moved to Children's and, you know, became more specialized. But in general dermatology, you know, it's a fast pace.
So you were going for efficiency, but also love. How about that?
There you go.
There you go. This was great. I learned a lot. I have been using your products, the fragrance version, because they smell delicious. And I love that they're not like medically, you know, it feels like a nice shampoo and conditioner, even though it's good for you. So thanks for making them. Awesome. And thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. It was great. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.